I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are a Paranormal Chicks.
Episode 392. I'm like waiting to hear from Colby right now because he went to his friend's house to help him move a piano. And I just had this, like, I guess it's really a thought, but you know how like your thoughts like is like almost like a movie kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that he was moving this piano and he popped his bicep tendon. And so I'm like, I'm just waiting to hear from him that, okay, I'm on my way home and, you know, biceps intact.
Oh my gosh.
But I did tell him, I was like, be careful, protect your back and your arms. He's really like, what the fuck? So I'll keep y'all posted if he texts. Okay. I don't want y'all to worry.
On the edge of our seat over here.
I know.
Speaking of edge of our seat, me and Chris went to see The Conjuring, the newest movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was our first movie date ever. And girl, we sat in, like, because you know how you have to pick your seats now?
Yeah.
Well, you can see where people are, and it's like they were spaced out so fucking perfectly that where do you sit? Because yeah. If you sit somewhere over here, you're right next to these people, but they're spaced perfectly for the people who've already picked their other spot, you know? So it's like, where do you go? And, you know, we're big people, so I don't want to just be like, ooh. There was this row, and it's like before you get to like the really too close, like only teenagers like to sit there, rows, you know? But it was right there, and there was a wall behind us, so we couldn't lean our whole seat back all the way. I said, why is this a recliner then?
Why didn't you move?
Well, I don't know. Because we had assigned seats.
Hmm. Were there empty seats?
I mean, on that same row.
So if y'all shifted down like two seats, what would have happened?
We did shift down, actually, because our seats didn't work. And so we said, okay. And you know what? We sat there and every time someone came around the corner, we said, they might have these seats. Like, you know.
Like The Conjuring's really popping in Hattiesburg, Mississippi.
Well, it really was. And I forgot how funny it is to watch movies, like suspenseful movies with like more people. Like I love watching them with Tiff because she's a talker. But there were like two couples that were talkers and stuff. And it was like, oh, no, girl.
Uh-uh. I see. I don't like that. Be quiet.
I was cracking up. But then I did not fall asleep this time because I couldn't really get comfortable because, like, you could kind of, like, do your feet, but not all the way up. And so it just wasn't, I was like, what the fuck? This, like, I hate this recliner anyway because it's the smaller of the recliners. Like, we went to that one.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, like, right when I sat down, it goes,
man, every time I sit down in those, my freaking thunder thighs make my feet go up.
Yes. And I was like, well, and then if I went another way, because it couldn't go back anymore, it would just go.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God. Like, so shift my leg that way. Like, thank God I'm comfortable with Chris because it was very like, oh, God. But then that motherfucker pulled a Donna and fell asleep for a moment.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
And I said, hey, you're asleep. And he said, was that loud? And I said, no, I got you before you were chopping down the trees. Like, you were just getting the chainsaw ready.
Well, Colby and I went to a Southern Miss football game, local university. And look, these tickets, they're not sold out, right? By no means. There was a ton of empty seats around us. Somebody had the seats directly behind us and sat directly behind us.
Oh, God. No.
I was like, why didn't they move? I mean, to be fair, we left early because Colby was going hunting the next morning. And so he was leaving the house at 5:30. So the game wasn't until 6. So we left at halftime. I think we left about 8, you know, so we could get home and go to bed. And if I would have had to stay any longer, though, I really was going to move down so I could like lean back because it's just the bleachers, no backs, you know?
Oh, God, that's your worst thing.
Yeah, I did okay, though. I mean, I didn't do good walking. That plantar fasciitis is killing me.
Oh, she told us that there was no railing. I automatically would have been like, well,
this is where I die because that's exactly how I felt.
No, I would say, well, let's go back and tailgate the whole part, the whole time because I have such like trauma response to that kind of shit. Even though these stadium stairs had a rail, and if they didn't, I would have died. But it was a rodeo that my best friend made me go to.
don't know what she's talking about.
Uh-huh. And we had really, really bad seats. So they were like all the way up. My legs were so heavy by the time I got there. Mm-hmm. I was like, am I just here? Am I okay? And then my belly was like basically touching the guy in front of his head.
I know. Because I hate couldn't those stadiums.
Sit all the way back in the seats. I was like, well, that's all, what it looked like.
All to see what, who, Band Perry, I think.
The Band Perry.
Well, meanwhile, though, no. I also had in new inserts in my shoes because, you know, one, I'm old. Two, plantar fasciitis. And three, turns out they were the wrong inserts. But they were, like, really thick. So it just felt like I was walking in wedges, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so going down, I was like, I'm scared to go down. And Colby was like, well, I'll just go in front. You hold on to me.
Aw.
He kept being like, are you okay? And I'm like, yes. And I was like, step two, like a toddler going down steps.
That's how I have to do it. Mostly because, you know, my legs are short, my belly's big, and I can't see the next step. I'm not taking a step of faith, okay?
I don't know how people go downstairs texting. Like, looking at their phone.
Me either. I'm like,
are your ankles made of steel? Have you never sprained your ankle before? How do you do that?
Honestly, I'm not a walker and texter. Like, I don't know. I'm not built that way. So that's all our ailments.
I know. I think that the universe may be coming to an end. I'm cold.
I was like, oh God, what happened? Yeah, she put on pajama pants under her muumuu.
I'm very cold right now. You know...
Oh, God, when you're achy, you got, like, a fever, chills, blah, blah, blah.
No, I was going to say, you know, like, right before you have to shit really, really bad and you're, like, got the beginnings of the chill bumps, that's how I feel right now.
Yep.
Not, like, the full-blown chills, but, like, I'm about to get chill bumps.
Yeah.
But let me tell you what we're going to do this weekend, then. I'm finally going to Lucky Rabbit, which is, like, this antique place around here. And they have, like, different rooms set up about different TV shows. I think Donna talked about how she and Chris and Tiffany went this past weekend. They have, like, the coolest Beetlejuice set up on the planet. But they have a Golden Girls set up, and it's been there for a long time. And I haven't gone yet. And I told Colby, I said, we are going this weekend because I am not, like, missing it and them taking Golden Girls down as big of a fan as I am. I said, we're going.
They have some really good shirts.
Well, my mom got me one and a Beetlejuice one, so I don't know which one she got.
Ooh, but yeah, they have some really good shirts, but they're comfort colors, but a lot of them only went up to a 2X. And
comfort colors goes up to a 3X.
Yes. I don't know.
They may have just been out.
Yeah, but there was this one shirt that I might get you to get. It's pink, and it has Monster Mash on it. And it's,
oh, that's cute.
Because I said, the world doesn't stop at a 2X, y'all.
Well, they have different setups. Like I said, they have like this huge Beetlejuice one that you like walk through. And then they just have scenes. At Christmas, they did National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. They have a Golden Girls room. They have a Wednesday room. They have a Schitt's Creek room.
Stranger Things.
Stranger Things. Yeah. It's really cool. But yeah. Then also like antiques.
The Beetlejuice is by far my favorite
thing ever. Like, it's, yeah, like four rooms, I would say, set up. Like, they have like the town miniatures in a room. They have the dining room with the sculptures. They have the waiting room in the afterlife, like with all the people too. Like, it's got the guy that falls asleep with the cigarette in his mouth. It's got the girl behind the desk. Like, it's got so many people. It's, I'm like, how did they even find these things?
I know.
But anyway, I'm going back this weekend. Well, before we get into this episode, we have to talk about Miracle Made. And thank God I got Miracle Made sheets on my bed tonight because my body doesn't know what it wants to do. Right now I'm cold, but most of the time I'm hot. But Miracle Made's got me covered no matter what temperature I'm feeling.
I see what you did there. Got you covered.
Yeah, I meant to do that.
Usually I do not like putting sheets on a bed. Like, I hate making up my bed. But when we're transitioning from our wash day and putting back on our Miracle Made sheets, it's like, oh my God, it's going to be so good tonight when we get into these sheets and actually have a good night's sleep, because it really does help you sleep and stay asleep, because the fabric is silver infused and they're temperature regulating. So whether it's hot girl summer or cold case winter, you are sleeping at the perfect temperature all night long. even if you're Carrie going through a hot flash cold phase.
But even better, because they're silver infused, it's like a self-cleaning antibacterial sheet. Like Miracle Made's whole line of bedding, sheets, pillowcases, comforters, everything. They prevent up to 99.7% of bacterial growth, which means you've got, well, one, you have to put it in the laundry less often, but also less allergies. It didn't smell weird, even when Donna's doing the horizontal mamba in it.
Like Carrie said, these sheets stay fresh 3 times longer than the others. So Miracle Made is luxurious, but also saves you time on laundry.
And even better, you're getting all that luxury without the super high price tag. And they have a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, you're going to get a full refund anyway. So you got nothing to lose.
I honestly feel like that's just them showing how confident they are in their product.
For sure. So right now, you can upgrade your sleep by going to trymiracle.com/creep, and you'll get 40% off. But if you use the promo code at checkout, you're going to get a free 3-piece towel set and save an extra 20%.
That's trymiracle.com/creep. And don't forget to use code creep to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40%.
That's trymiracle.com/creep and use the promo code creep at checkout.
Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode and making us feel clean, cool, and just the right kind of cozy.
Okay, so my story this week is a recommendation from Kate S. in the email. Content warning, this one does involve kids, so, you know, do what you got to do. Also, I'm really glad that I am going first. So we're talking about Catherine Rattan, who has like 18 different last names, but she had 2 kids, Logan Tucker and a kid we're just going to call Justin. There's kind of a lot of names in this story, but those are really the only 3 that you need to know. So Catherine had been adopted when she was young, along with one of her brothers, but she had another brother that wasn't adopted. But I think that that brother came along later. Like, it wasn't like they adopted 2 of the 3, you know? But it seems by all accounts that Catherine had a relatively typical childhood growing up. But in her adult life, she got married a lot. She had the 2 kids. And, well, honestly, she wasn't a good mom. There's a lot of people that talk about how she treated the kids, more specifically Logan. So her third husband, who, well, it doesn't matter his name, but he said that Catherine would yell at them a lot, and like she just would spend all of her time on the computer instead of actually taking care of her kids. And neighbors have said that she told them that she couldn't stand Logan and that he was a mistake that stood in her way of all that she could accomplish, and that he was the reason that her relationships failed and she didn't know what to do with him.
I want to know why it's that, like, if you have multiple kids and you're, you know, like an abusive person and stuff, why you center on one child usually? Because you've done another one where that child had to like take care of the other kids, mm-hmm. and they were getting food. He wasn't, you know, and it's like,
yeah.
What makes them center on one? Like, why is she centered on Logan?
Well, I'm no psychiatrist or psychologist, but we do find out later that Logan is a boy, but he had a sister that was a twin that passed away. And I don't know, like in utero, after birth, I never really saw like when, but so maybe she blamed him for the death of her daughter. Regardless of that, she treated him like shit. And Justin got attention and Logan was ignored. Catherine would spank Logan with a belt and plastic coat hangers. Now, when Catherine had separated from her third husband, she moved in with a guy and they had met at the kid's daycare because he had a kid there. And they had gone on this ride and Catherine and Logan were screaming at each other a bunch, apparently. But I'm like, he's 6, so that's weird if he even was 6 at this point. But that Catherine told this guy, stop the truck, like kicked Logan out of the truck and was like, okay, go, leave him on the side of the road. And this guy was like drove a couple of feet and was like, no, and like put Logan back in the truck.
The fuck?
Why would you even like, okay, good on you for stopping, but why would you have ever even been like, okay, let me drive off a couple of feet? Like, I'd have been like, abso-fucking-lutely not.
Right.
You get out.
Yeah. How could you be with someone like after you see how they treat their kid?
When you have a kid too. Y'all literally met at the daycare. Well, same guy and Catherine. They were talking in bed one night because Catherine was like, my brother found me this job out of state, but I can't go because my brother doesn't like kids, so I can't bring the kids. And so she tells this guy, like, I wish there was some way that I could, like, kill the kids and get away with it. And this guy's like, wait, what? And she's like, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
What? Like, I thought you were going to say that she wanted him to watch the kids.
No. Mm-mm. No, she's like, how can I kill him so that I can go on about my life? And this guy apparently was so worried by it that he went and slept in his daughter's bed. I'm like, I bet you fucking did.
Absolutely. But, I mean, I would have just got my kid and...
Well, it's his house and she was living with him. He had to use like a crisis center to be able to get them out of the house.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Also, what kind of job is it that you only needed to go one weekend to...
It wasn't one weekend. It was she would have had to move there and live with the brother.
Oh, okay.
There's accounts of her telling people like, I hate the weekends. Most people love the weekends because they get to spend time with their children. But I hate the weekends because I dread spending time with my kids. And like, I get that every parent has that moment where they're like, oh, these fucking kids. Like, of course you do. You love them to death, but you fucking want to punch them in their face sometimes. Like, we get that. That it's not all fucking pushing up daisies. There's moments of pure hell as a parent. But this is like her overarching thing. This is not like a moment of like, I need to trip away from my kids. Like, I need to ship them off to the grandparents so my partner and I can go reset at a fucking all-inclusive, you know?
Right.
Or I need to go to a girls' trip and just let, you know, my partner stay with the kid. Like, this isn't that. This is a, like, she truly thinks that her kids, specifically Logan, are impacting her life in such a negative way and, like, holding her down.
Meanwhile, it's you negatively impacting their lives.
Mm-hmm. Well, in April of 2002, this was in Tulsa, and officers got called to a wellness check because she had told the police officers that she was afraid she was going to hurt her kids and didn't want to be around them, and that Logan made her so angry that she just wanted to hit him as hard as she could.
The fact that she can say that
to a police officer, like, how? So, like, one, what is she doing behind closed doors? Or, like, what are her true darkest thoughts if you could say that to a police officer?
Right.
So they did take the boys into protective custody, but, I mean, eventually she got them back. She really wanted her adopted parents to take care of Logan, and they're like, we can't. She wanted Logan to move in with them, and they're like, I'm sorry, but we can't. She's like, she's so overwhelmed, et cetera, et cetera. But they lived in Florida, and so they weren't around him all the time. So around May 2nd of 2002, Catherine meets another guy through the personal ads on the internet.
Like Craigslist?
It just said personal ads. I don't know. This is from that case law website. So she met this guy named Michael, and she had just gotten the kids back. So she and this guy, Michael, were kind of starting to get kind of serious. And so they wanted to be closer because she was in Tulsa. He was in this area called Fort Supply in Oklahoma. And so he was like, well, like, I want you to move to the area, but I'm not ready for us to live together. And she was like, about halfway through the month of May, she was like, well, guess what? I was fired from my job, so we're moving there. And so they stayed with him for a couple of weeks. But again, he wasn't ready for that. And so he was like, well, let's like set you up with somebody else to live with so you can stay in the area. We can kind of work on our relationship. But we're just not, I mean, like, it's been like a month. We're not ready to live together. So she moved in with one of his coworkers, Melody Lennington. This happened on July 10th of 2002. So at this point, Logan's 6 and Justin is 4. But Catherine, who, by the way, does go by Katie, but fuck her. she talked shit about Logan all the time to Melody and said that Logan tried to burn down their house in Tulsa. And at one point, Melody like kind of smelled a sulfur smell in her house. She found Logan with cigarettes and Justin with a lighter.
What the fuck?
And so she called the police. And when they get there, Catherine is like, yeah, he's trying to burn the house down just like he did in Tulsa. Like, you need to arrest him. And
what?
Yes, a fucking six-year-old. They don't, but they do call like a social worker to the scene.
I'm sorry. You know those cops were like, oh God, here's another parent that's going to be like, they're just kids. They didn't know any better.
Yeah.
And she's like, arrest them, throw them under the jail.
Right. Because she did not, I mean, she hated Logan.
Yeah. But I just kind of like imagine the police being like, what? Like, what? Like, ma'am, he's six. He just knows how to write his name, the ABCs.
Right.
He still loves Barney.
Well, when this gets back to the guy she's dating, that all this went down, he's like, fuck, I'm the one that set her up with this woman, you know, to move into her house, my friend. And he's like, you need to get out of her house. Like, you need to move out of Melody's house. He tells this to Catherine. And you can't live with me. I don't want you to live with any of my family because you ain't fucking burning down our houses.
Well, also, like, why would you continue to have a relationship with her?
For real.
Like, if you're like, oh, God, you can't be around anyone in my family, any of my friends, because I don't trust you or your kids.
Right.
Like, maybe but let's keep, that shouldn't be.
Yeah, but let's keep hooking up.
Yeah.
So on June 20th of 2002, Catherine talks to a few different people of like a domestic violence crisis service, the mental health center of Woodward, and DHS, because she is trying to get Logan sent away to a hospital, a shelter, something. She wants to get rid of her parental rights. Her whole thing is like, oh, he had hid some lighters and he tried to stab Justin. All of this, but I'm going to be honest, I found nothing in any of the articles that I saw that showed that Logan was like, I mean, she's almost describing him as like that, like oppositional defiant disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I found nothing to indicate from any of his like school stuff. I mean, because I feel like that would have come out, like if his,
right,
because he was in preschool and all of that. And so like, I just feel like some of that would have come out if he had those tendencies.
Well, also, when he found the cigarettes, Justin had the lighter. So they were in it together. You know, like, I feel like she probably gave him that.
Exactly.
To set him up, you know?
So Catherine's like, we're scared. We want him to go to this shelter. Or we want him placed in this inpatient psychiatric hospital. Well, when they called the hospital that specifically for kids, there wasn't a room. But they were like, but by Monday, there should be another room. So, like, just hold tight, essentially over the weekend. This totally upset Catherine because she wanted Logan admitted that day. And she's like, he's dangerous. He needs to be placed immediately. But all the people from, like, DHS and all that are like, this seems like such a typical kid. Like, he's well-mannered. He's friendly. Like, I don't see, which, to be fair, I mean, we've all seen movies, you know, like, a kid could be like, ha ha, and like, you know.
Yeah, Dennis the Menace.
But like, truly, a kid with oppositional defiant disorder may be able to play that off to somebody. But again, I saw nothing, no accounts that that was true. But they did see that Catherine was very impatient with him, hard on him, and would like shout at him. So on Friday, June 21st of 2022, Catherine was real pissed because she couldn't find anybody to watch the kids, and she wanted to go to this motorcycle rally. Well, on Sunday, June 23rd, the roommate, Melody, hears a scream at about 3 a.m., and she thought it was Logan, but she was like, well, maybe I'm just nightmare, whatever.
So they're still living there?
Yes.
Okay.
They hadn't gotten out yet. And so she just kind of, okay, goes back to sleep. Well, a little while later, she gets up and she sees that Catherine is just like chilling at the computer, which I think it sounds like she always did. And she's like, hey, what was that? Was that Logan? And Catherine was like, yeah, he was sick. So I put him back. I put him in the back bedroom. And so she was like, okay, it's 6 a.m. She gets up and gets ready back to go to work. And Catherine's still sitting there at the damn computer. And she's like, hey, I need to get my work clothes from the back bedroom, but I don't want to wake up Logan. And Catherine's like, oh, don't worry. He's in the basement.
The fuck?
Right. And why is he in the basement? You know, but she's like, okay, well, that's not my kid. Like, I got to go to work. And that's the last time anyone had seen or heard from Logan Tucker.
Oh, gosh.
So in the days after, this is so convoluted, but Catherine told about 483 stories. So they're like, you need a fucking murder board to piece together all of the different stories that she told. So I'm going to do my best to kind of tell you some of them. It was a long time before Catherine's brother even reported Logan missing, because her adopted parents were like, we haven't heard from Logan. Like, something's going on. It's fishy. And then asked the brother, like, can you please call? So it wasn't even Catherine that reported him missing. So like I said, multiple different stories. She told some people that DHS had picked Logan up, but they were like, well, why did they take Logan and not Justin? And it seems like there wasn't really an answer. And this whole time, Catherine's like completely like stoic. There's literally like, she doesn't care. She said that she was treating the situation the same as when she had her daughter, Logan's twin, who passed away. And like, basically like, I'm going to look at it like he's dead and that's all. But it's like, wait, what? What are you talking about? Like, because he got pulled by DHS, you're just going to treat him like he's dead? Like, what are you talking about? But she's like, well, he's not dead. But I'm just like, but like, just so you know, he's not dead. I'm just going to pretend like he is. So that was weird. And then that night, she went over to this other guy's house, like basically all dressed up, like on a date, to look at pictures from a motorcycle rally, but like telling people that DHS had taken Logan. Like, it was just absolutely no big deal. Well, then on Monday, the hospital called to be like, hey, we have a spot. And Catherine tells them she doesn't need it because Logan went to live with his uncle. Then she had asked the Melody, the girl that she was living with, honestly, by the way, not 100% sure that's her real name. That's what case law called her. But she had told her, like, hey, I saw some wildflowers that I really want to put in this window box. Are you cool if I do that? And she's like, I'm going to dig them up.
Oh, my God.
And so she ended up borrowing a shovel and some plastic. So, Well, then a few days later, she takes Justin to daycare and she tells them, like, oh, Logan won't be back. He went to a mental hospital and he's not coming back. So it's like she's telling some people DHS came, some people that...
The uncle.
Yes. And then she later starts to tell people that the uncle like took him camping. But then, no, the uncle didn't take him camping. The uncle took him because he's like a traveling salesman, took him with him. But on June 27th, the Casey Anthony of it all, she goes to a motorcycle rally, like is in a topless, like wet t-shirt type competition, like living her best life at this motorcycle rally while her son is God knows where.
Oh my God.
Eventually starts telling some people that his biological father had him. And like, it's just, there's just so many different stories. She had asked different people to call her parents and tell them that Logan was okay. And meanwhile, she's like telling the people that are supposed to be calling, like, yeah, his father took me to court and he got full custody. So that's where he is. So the police get involved and the whole town gets involved and they start looking for Logan, and Catherine never joins any of the search operations.
What? Okay.
None. Does nothing to help find him.
What? Come on. The level of nonchalant is just baffling.
Well, like when the police first got there to interview her, she told them that Logan was with her brother camping, and she was like, either Pennsylvania, Vermont, somewhere like that. Like, how would you not know exactly where your six-year-old is at all times?
Right, right.
So the police are like, cool, cool. What's his number? And she's like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Why would you tell them that where they could definitely fact check it? Like, you're going to have his number because you had to make these plans. God.
Yeah. And then she got this guy to call and leave a message on the answer machine saying that Logan's okay. He'll be back in a few days. Like, he's alive. And the police were like, this is the weirdest message. Well, turns out when all this started breaking on the news about this kid Logan is missing, this guy's like, Logan, missing? Is that thing I called about? And tells police. Like, they go to the police and they're like, hey, yeah, I had to call. Like, this person asked me to do this.
Oh, so it's like, my God.
It's so, like, it's literally so dumb. But the police do end up finding her brother. And he's like, no, I don't have him. So there is this multi-episodic podcast called Looking for Logan Tucker. And they go into a lot more details on, like, the brother. But basically, he, like, lost his business because of this. Because he's like, who wants to work for this guy? Because he was, like, this traveling salesman that had some people selling cleaning products. And I think his wife left him and everything. Like, it was, like, a big deal that she dragged him into this.
Oh, fuck.
But at one point, like, she had said she didn't know his number, and the police were like, oh, okay, can I borrow your phone? And they're like, doop, boop, 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 and called, and it was the brother because they did have the phone number. And they're like, here you go. You can talk to him. And, like, they were like, you could literally hear the yelling in the phone. Like, he's like, what the fuck kind of thing.
Yeah. Holy shit.
And when they did bring her in for questioning and all, they were like, if by the next morning you don't either, like, call your brother and get Logan back or file a kidnapping report, like, we're going to treat this as a homicide and we're going to think that you did this. And she never did. So they get a search warrant for her house. And in the basement, they find this bed that has no bedding on it, a pillow that has no case on it. There's some shelving. There's a white bucket on the floor. And I'm wondering if she kept him down there.
I think she did, because that seems awfully like he had to use a bathroom in that bucket. Yes. He didn't get, like, a nice bed. It's all things that, yeah, that just sounds like when people get kidnapped or held.
Like, he's being held hostage down there. Now, I never saw anything that said that the bucket had, like, you know, urine or feces in it, but it did have a wad of masking tape in it. It kind of on a bunch of stuff. There was, like, an orange candle wax substance, for lack of a better word. And kind of the long story short of that is that they did do some testing in the hair, and there was some blood on that, showed that it was Logan's. They searched her car, and in her trunk, they found, like, drain cleaner, a rope, some plastic. And remember, she had borrowed some plastic and a, what's it called, shovel from her little boyfriend, Michael, you know, when she was going to dig up the wildflowers that she never dug up. And like I said, they did some serious searches, like 300 to 400 volunteers over days were looking for Logan, and Catherine could not fucking be bothered. They did do another search of the house, and they realized that there was a blue suitcase that was missing. And the suitcase was important to the roommate because it was her father's.
You mean to tell me that she put Logan in a suitcase that didn't even belong to her?
Well.
And buried him?
So the police, like, prove that the brother never took him camping because they're able to, like, go through his company and show, like, travel logs and all of that that showed he was in a completely different state. Like, he did not do this. And at this point, like, FBI is involved. Everybody's involved. And so they go look at Logan's biological father, but he hadn't seen him since he was a baby. Because I heard on that Looking for Logan podcast that Catherine had lied to him and told him she had had, I think, a hysterectomy or, oh no, ovarian cancer, and she couldn't have kids. Well, not long after that, she fucking ended up pregnant.
Wow.
Yeah.
But, like, hold on. So he knew she was pregnant with Logan, but he just didn't have anything to do with him?
I'm not really sure. I think that they ended up breaking up after Logan was born, and I don't really know why he never, I mean, he may not be a great guy either. I don't know. Yeah. But, I mean, I don't know. who knows what happened with that.
Okay.
She gets interviewed by the FBI. She tells them that Logan had gone on a camping trip with her brother and that the brother was like, I'll call you back in a few days. And then a few days later, he called back. And before she could get his phone number, he hung up.
What the fuck?
So in September of that year, she ends up moving to Bartsville, Oklahoma, like just to get away from everything. Because, you know, old roommate girl had kicked her the fuck out, been like, get out of my house. So after she moved, she was talking to this person that they didn't even know that she had kids. And she was like, oh, I remember those days kind of thing, you know. And the lady was like, oh, I didn't know you had kids. And she's like, yeah, I have, you know, a 6-year-old and one that would be 9. And then they're like, oh, my God, what happened? And she told them that he got killed by a drunk driver.
What the actual fuck?
Yes.
Like, fuck all the way off.
Yes. Well, because the thing is that when all this went down, they took Justin from her. Like, so he had gone into the system, like, immediately. So these people didn't know that she even had 2 kids, you know. And then she said that her other son went and lived with his father. Then she moved again and got arrested for writing bad checks. But again, never was like, hey, what's going on? So now we're 4 years into Logan's disappearance.
Holy fuck.
Police ended up charging her with his murder, even though they didn't have a body.
Wow.
So Justin, who at the time of the trial was 9, testified. And I'm going to be honest, I feel like the kind of timeline of all this is confusing because they also used a lot of interviews from Justin because remember, he's 4 when this happens. And so there's a lot of like, they're riding in cars and he says something. And so the people that he's in the car with have to testify what he said, you know, that kind of thing. But I'm going to be honest, there were a couple of things that they said that I'm like, I don't know a 4-year-old that could do that, that could know right where something was down this road, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But he tells police that the last time that he saw Logan, that he and his mom, like it was in one day that his mom said they had to go somewhere. So him and Logan were in the back seat, but Logan wasn't talking or moving. And he said that they drove and drove and that they parked. And his mom went into this house, but he couldn't really see if she went into the house because there were, like, trees blocking.
Mm-hmm.
But that at some point when she came back to the car, Logan wasn't with her and that there was a man that drove off. And so that's, I feel like, okay, again, this is where his stuff didn't really make sense to me, mm-hmm. but it definitely shows that something sinister happened. Because then I feel like, especially on the Looking for Logan podcast, he actually gets interviewed. And he says, like, no, this is what I remember happening. He said that he remembers, and again, he said, this is what I testified then, and this is what I told them, that his mom and him had gone on a ride with Logan. Logan was white and not talking, and his mom said that he was sick. But that at some point, there was some tape over his eyes and mouth, Logan's eyes and mouth. And his mom told him Logan was sick. And they went on this ride. And then once they got to where they were going, like kind of like a field type thing, his mom told him, stay in the car and don't get out. And left him with like windows cracked and some water and snacks and was like, do not get out of the car. There are snakes on this ground that will kill you if you get out. So don't move. And so he stayed in this car fucking mm-hmm. terrified that he's going to get out and these snakes are going to kill him. And he said it was daylight when they got there and it was dark when she got back and they left. And that she left carrying Logan and came back without him.
What the fuck? So, I mean, obviously something had to have happened at 3.
Right.
Because the roommate heard something.
Right. And there was a little blood and stuff in the basement, but I don't know. But when he asked, like, where's Logan? His mom would tell him he's not coming back because he did bad things.
How do you even reconcile that as a kid?
I don't know. Justin took investigators to where, quote, Mama put her foot on the fence and got the shovel and went through the fence that way into the grass area. Like, that's what he said. Like, he took police to these different places.
Holy shit.
And there were accounts where, I mean, he would, like, drive by something and say, that's where the man lived. That's where this happened. That's where this happened. And that's where I'm like, can a four-year-old really do that? But maybe they can. I don't know.
Also, we don't know the trauma, the real trauma that he saw. And I just go back to like when my mom and dad would argue and my dad would be so mean, I would just like look out the car window and like focus on other things to not focus on them. So maybe he did the same thing and that's why he could recall some of that, but I don't know.
Now, there was another part of this case, though, that a worker from like waste management came through and said, hey, actually, I right around the time that he went missing right by the house, which is, but, you know, on cross-examination, they were like, is this where this house usually drops their trash? And he's like, no, it was down from it. But there was a blue suitcase that was heavy and it was like all wrapped up with like rope and I don't know, like cellophane or something. It was like all wrapped up. He was going to need a knife to cut through it to see what was in it. But it was about 40 to 60 pounds. And he said he thought there was a dead animal in it.
What the fuck? And but so if that's the case.
Exactly. Yes. Hold my thought. Keep going with me. Because I did the same thing. I was like, what? This makes no sense. But he said that he had taken it. Like he went to try to open it. And like he could feel someone watching him. And he looked and there was somebody watching him. And so he just like put it in the thing and took it to the landfill. So police dug through, because this was like years later, they dug through this landfill and tried to find this suitcase and couldn't find it. Now, in the trials, there was something about how like with, because it was like July, the ground was really hard to be able to dig it up because it was hot and dry. So this is kind of what I think police think happened, is that she had taken him and Justin in the car and borrowed the shovel and tarp and were that he, she was going to bury him. And then it actually ended up being too hard, and so she couldn't do it. So she left him where she took him and then took Justin back home and then went back later and maybe put like got him and then put him in the suitcase and then let him be taken to the landfill.
My God.
But at this trial, the jury deliberated for less than 2 hours and found her guilty of first-degree murder. She was sentenced to life in prison without parole. And she does actually get interviewed on the Looking for Logan Tucker podcast. And I'm going to be honest, I listened to half of it and I just wanted to throw my phone because she just pissed me off so bad. But because I really do think that she did this. I mean, obviously the jury without a body deliberated for 2 hours. She had so many different stories. She never fucking looked for him. And then, like I said, the Casey Anthony of it all just went on and lived her best life when he was missing, like nothing had ever fucking happened. In the years since, there has been tons of searches. And I mean, people have donated money. They've brought in psychics. They have done everything they can, but we still don't know where Logan Tucker is.
What in the fuck?
But she is still in prison and serving life.
I mean, I guess that's a small miracle. And Justin's safe now.
Right. But right. Justin's like 20 years old now.
Gosh.
But I do recommend going and listening to that podcast because it did have a lot about like, one of the investigators, like the main investigator that was like just super great and everybody loved him. And he died of like a stroke right after, like, well, I don't want to say right after, but not long after they had spent all those hot, long hours looking for Logan in the landfill. And basically his wife was like, yeah, he literally died looking for Logan.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, this is incredibly sad. And then that we don't have an end for Logan.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I do want y'all to listen to that podcast. I don't want to give too much away, but Justin is, like I told you, he was interviewed too. And they were like, well, what, like, because he has nothing to do with his mom, doesn't talk to her. And it was like, well, what would it take for you to talk to her? And he's like, for her to tell me where Logan's body is. But she's standing by it that she's innocent. She remarried like before she got convicted. Oh, they're still fucking married.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yep.
Wow. Well, thank you for this recommendation, because I did not know this story, and Logan's story definitely deserves to be told. And my God, I hope someday they find his remains. Well, onto a lighter story.
I know. I was so glad that I went first this week with this story because, whew.
Yeah, it's heavy. So the other weekend, Tiffany and I watched Sinners, and we had really wanted to see this because Michael B. Jordan's in there, and he is eye candy. And it was like set in the olden days, and you know Tiffany's an old soul, but it was like set in Mississippi, and it was supposed to be a scary movie. So we were like, absolutely, we want to watch this. And I had started this story forever ago. Like, I've had these notes, but I didn't never finish it. And so I decided to finish it because I'm talking about Robert Johnson. Now, the movie Sinners isn't an autobiography at all because there's like vampires and stuff in there. But one of the main characters is loosely based on Robert Johnson. And also, it's like, I recommend Sinners, but I also don't because it was good, but weird. And then like at the end, it just, I don't know. We were like, I wanted more. And like Chris had came in and he was like, I mean, I like it, but I don't like it. And I don't know how to feel about that.
Wait, that's that one that Colby and I watched. Did we told you about that one? No. Didn't we tell you about that? Okay, I did watch that one. Can you believe it?
I can't, but did you like it?
Kind of, yeah.
It's one of those like, I like it, but I don't like it. Look, we were like, where is Michael B. Jordan at? And then
turns out there was two of them.
Yeah. And then we were like, oh, that's him. And then he's a twin. And we were like, no, that's him. Wait, that's him playing both, right? And we were like kind of looking because it's filmed dark and my TV, like the dark is so dark. And I was like, my God, my eyes are hurting. So we had to look it up because I was like, I cannot spend this whole fucking movie thinking, am I stupid that these aren't really him doing the same character or what? You know what I mean? But yes, two of him. So, I mean, twice the eye candy. But okay, not really about Michael B. Jordan. This is about Robert Johnson. Now, I first heard about Robert Johnson when I was in college because one of my history professors for Mississippi history loved him and had introduced him to us because he was just talking about like the blues music and stuff because he's like, that's how you learn through history is the songs from the time and all of that. And so I just loved that professor so much. But he got me hooked on Robert Johnson. And the other day we were riding in the car and I was listening to just like my liked songs on Spotify. And Robert Johnson came on because there's this one song that I love of his. And it's like, Come On In My Kitchen. And Chris said, oh, hell no. How old are you? And I was like, this is blues. He's like, this is like old blues, though. Not like, you know, it's not like the cool blues right now. You know what I mean? It's like the old, and it's literally from like the early 1900s. So yeah. It's like got the like the crackle and everything because it wasn't, you know, in someone's basement with like all the fucking shit, like the studio all done and all the things. But anyway, picture it. Hazelhurst, Mississippi, 1911. And that's when Robert Leroy Johnson was born. Or at least that's the best guess that anyone's got because there's never been a birth certificate that's been found. Now, his mama, Julia Dodds, she had him after a fling with a plantation worker named Noah Johnson. And so that's why he has the last name Johnson. His dad wasn't really in the picture, and for a while, neither was stability. He bounced around different homes. He lived in Memphis. He went to Robinsonville. And he also was all over the Delta in Mississippi. Sometimes with his mom, sometimes with other relatives. He had half siblings a lot of places. So, you know, he just kind of like was kind of tossed around to different people. Now, in Memphis, this was like the city life for him. He caught the music bug and he got some education. Again, the city life. And so he had access to music other than like gospel and other than what he heard in the fields when he was in Mississippi and stuff. So it really just really enticed him to do more with music. And Robert really didn't know what he wanted to do with his life, but he knew he didn't want to be in the fields. He didn't want that kind of work. By the time he was in his teens, he always walked around with a beat-up guitar. And with this guitar, again, he wasn't playing the gospel music or anything. He was playing, quote, the devil's music, which was blues. He did find someone that he wanted to share the rest of his life with. No matter where he was, no matter what songs he was playing, he wanted her by his side. But they married young. Like, he was a teenager, she was too. And his wife, Virginia, she died during childbirth along with their baby. So people, of course, were like, well, if you would have been playing the gospel music, you know, the Lord might have like blessed you, but instead you're celebrating Satan and the devil and all of this. So you kind of reap what you sow. And that was really her family. So they all blamed Robert for this. Like, you killed our baby and your baby. And so a lot of people were just kind of like, he's cursed because of this. And I mean, he didn't have an easy life growing up. So they're like, you know, again, kind of leaning into that curse legend. And I can't imagine being a teenager, never had a stable childhood, never having like that stable home or anything. Finding someone that is your home and then her dying along with your baby. You know, I don't even understand that grief. And that kind of grief changes a person. And for Robert, it just kind of pushed him more into the blues. But that's when we're going to insert the crossroads, because this is where the myth, the legend of Robert Johnson really starts. Now, Robert was a rambling man. You know, a rolling stone. He didn't catch any moss.
How many, like, sayings can you say in one two-sentence thing?
I don't know, but I'm really impressed with myself.
That was three.
But he ended up disappearing, okay? Like, he was like, you know what? I got to be out of here. Because also, I'm sure everything reminded him of what he's lost. So it wasn't just like he's like, you know, I'm leaving y'all, whatever. He was leaving the hurt.
And,
yeah. But before he disappeared, people, you know, were like, Robert, give it up because you're not really good at the guitar. He didn't care. It was more like he felt it in his bones. You know, he's like me singing, okay? I'm not good, and Carrie would much rather hear the radio than me, but I'm going to sing because I love music.
When have I ever told you don't sing?
You haven't, but you have turned up the radio.
I just wanted you to find your harmonies.
Uh-huh. No, you said that, like, you couldn't sing well enough because I was making you off tune.
That may have happened.
Yeah. Hold on. You're interrupting my singing. Hold on. But anyway, people were like, come on, Robert, give it up. Like, they thought it was just going to be a phase and then, you know, he was going to make something of his life, blah, 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 blah. Now, Son House, who is one of the Delta legends of blues, he said that people would beg Robert to stop playing during his sets. And, you know, he was like, it wasn't music. It was a racket. You know, no one was dancing to this music. They were like, who the fuck hired him? Who let him play? But then again, he vanished for a while. It was about a year, a little bit more than a year. And when he came back, people, they were floored because he was so much better. Like, it wasn't just like, oh, he fine-tuned his craft, you know? It's like, no, how did that happen? How did that guy who was, like, basically getting tomatoes thrown at him and all this shit turn into this that was like, holy fuck, We've never heard the blues sound this way.
Made a deal with the devil.
Well, with all my stories, Carrie ruins it. And yeah, that happened.
Oh. Hi.
Oh, God. So that's the story that stuck. They said that Robert was seen at one point before he vanished going down to the crossroads, which is basically an intersection. Like,
what in the Bone Thugs and Harmony?
And they say it was Highway 49 meets 61 in Clarksdale, Mississippi, which Highway 49 runs through Hattiesburg. So it's just wild to hear these stories and it be here. And they say that he was down on his knees and he was met with a tall, dark figure who offered to tune his guitar. And of course, with that, he's like, I'll tune it and you'll play the, you know, you'll be the best blues player. You'll, you know, do whatever, blah, blah, blah. But you have to make a deal with me. And with that deal, he gave up his soul, you know, to be a blues legend. And from that point on, he could play things that no one else could play. Like, he was like bending the notes. He was playing where the guitar should never sound like that, but it did. And people said it sounded like he was playing with two hands, like basically four hands. There's no way that he could be with these two strings and this chord over here. And it's like, how was he playing that with one guitar by himself? It was just unheard of. And the thing is that his blues kind of backed up the story, because he wrote songs like Crossroad Blues, Hellhound on My Trail, Me and the Devil Blues. You know, they weren't subtle. It's like he kind of leaned into it instead of avoiding it. And maybe it was because it made for a good story and it made him mysterious. And, you know, like, people were then scared of him and mesmerized by him. And so that's better than pity and, you know, better than them blaming him for, you know, all the things that they had blamed him for. Like, on Crossroad Blues, it said, I went to the crossroad, fell down on my knees, ask the Lord above, have mercy now, save poor Bob, if you please. And, I mean, that's literally him saying crossroads. You know, the deal with the devil happens at the crossroads at midnight, and he's begging for God to have mercy. And so it's like, they're just feeling like he's kind of regretful for what he did, but also he's made the deal. He's going to live up to his end of the bargain and all of that. Like, Me and the Devil Blues, it said, early this morning when you knocked upon my door and I said, hello, Satan, I believe it's time to go. And I mean, he's literally telling him that it's time to pay the price, and that's his soul and all the things. Hellhound on My Trail was, I gotta keep moving. Blues falling down like hail, blues falling down like hail, and the day keeps on worrying me. There's a hellhound on my trail.
Which is the devil, right?
Well, that's,
No, like his thing, his minions.
Yeah, and it's like they get sent after, and you can't like outrun a hellhound. And of course, people resonated with these songs because, I mean, the blues came out of hurt and, you know, call for freedom and all of that. And so people loved his music. People were transcended from his music. Like, it was an experience that they could not be in the field when they heard his music and, you know, things like that. But what's wild is that Robert Johnson was so popular, so beyond his years, but he only recorded 29 songs in two sessions. One was in Antonio in 1936, and the other was in Dallas in 1937. And that's it. Like, that's his full catalog. But,
damn.
Yeah. And so, like, you would think that he had, like, I mean, think about Taylor Swift. She has so many freaking albums and, like, the Beatles and all of these people. Don't you love that? I'm like, Taylor Swift, amazing. The Beatles, like, again, like legends or whatever, but Taylor Swift is my legend, okay?
Well, she does have a shit ton of albums.
She does.
But I'm smiling because remember, Beatles came up in the Am I the Asshole this week,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah.
That's probably why you thought about that.
Probably because I don't love them. But even though there were only 29 songs that were recorded of his, he helped make rock and roll what it is. Because even like the Rolling Stones, Zeppelin, Bob Dylan, Eric Clapton, they all pulled from Robert Johnson and sampled his music. Eric Clapton was interviewed about Robert Johnson, and he said that when he heard Johnson for the first time, it was like finding the master he didn't know he was looking for.
Damn. What kind of master? Like a master song or a master over him?
I don't know.
Like the devil?
Ooh, I don't know. I didn't even think about that. Now, after he recorded his 29 songs, Robert Johnson hit the road hard. He traveled the whole East Coast with Johnny Shines, who was another guy who played the blues. He traveled from St. Louis to Harlem to Detroit, things where his name became like a well-known thing. He was a legend and not just a local legend. And honestly, everyone was like, he is on track to become a superstar. Not just playing in juke joints, which is like, I got that from Sinners, you know.
Juke joints?
I mean, I know that's a word, but I'm just saying, like, I would have said bars and clubs, but it is a juke joint.
That's what my dad always called them.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Also, when you were watching Sinners, did it remind you of Ray's Boom Boom Room from Life?
I don't remember Life that well.
Well, because, I mean, it wasn't an actual place, but that was where he was like, he was going to have this huge, you know, place where it was going to be Ray's Boom Boom Room, and he would like have a dream about it and all the things. And when they were talking about opening up a juke joint, me and Tiffany both were like, Ray's Boom Boom Room. But whatever. Okay. Anyway, so with Robert Johnson becoming more popular, traveling around, John Hammond, who is a like well-known producer, he wanted Robert Johnson to perform at Carnegie Hall in 1938. Like, it was going to be his huge break. But Robert Johnson never made it. In that same year, in Greenwood, Mississippi, Robert Johnson passed away. He was just 27 years old.
What?
Yeah. And here's where the whole, like, myth, mysterious, legend kind of folds back in. Because there's not a real clear reason of death, cause of death. Why did it say reason of death? I have no idea. There is reasonable doubt, but no cause of death. The most accepted is that he was poisoned.
By who?
Well, by a man of a woman he was messing around with. And her man was angry, jealous, and handed Robert Johnson a bottle of whiskey, but it was laced with strychnine.
Mm.
Question mark is, did I say that right?
Okay. Yes.
And Robert never turned down a drink. So it was kind of like this man knew. So he's like, okay, the one thing he's not, like, he, why would he ever have taken something from this man? Because he didn't know him. Like, if he's messing around with his woman, he probably didn't even know. Like, he didn't care. Like,
right.
Sure, you could be his girl back home, but, like, right now, you mine in my bed kind of thing. Well, then he's like, ooh, a bottle of whiskey, drank it, and he started getting sick almost immediately. Now, Honey Boy Edwards was a friend of his and another blues player, and he said that he watched Robert Johnson kind of deteriorate, and I don't think I said that right either.
You did.
Oh, okay, good. But over the next few days, he just got worse. And they didn't go to the doctor. They didn't go to the hospital. It was just a really slow, painful death. Some say that he howled like an animal and that he crawled on all fours before collapsing. And with that, they were kind of saying like about a hellhound, like a hellhound had taken over him.
No, he was just hurting.
Now, others say he died with his guitar across his chest, whispering to his mother that it was the devil's instrument and to hang it on the wall because he was done with it. Now, of course, most historians say that it was probably syphilis because
he did hook up a lot.
He did hook up a lot. There wasn't a woman he turned down and there wasn't a bottle.
Drink, yeah.
But then others say that it might have been pneumonia. But the thing is, the poison fits the legend well. And so the facts kind of blur and all the things. And there's no paperwork. So
right,
what can you say? Like, who knows? There's no confirmed burial site for him either. There's three different grave markers that claim the spot. And that's how it goes with Robert. Like, even in death, he can't be pinned down. He was traveling soul. He, you know, again, was a rolling stone, all the things.
Couldn't catch any moss.
But what we do know is that he died at the age of 27. And that makes him the original member of what would be known as the 27 Club. And that's a group of musicians who died at the same young age.
Oh.
And so it's like they're all cursed.
Like Kurt Cobain.
Yep. Go ahead and ruin everything else for me, Karen. But no, Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison, Kurt Cobain, Amy Winehouse. I was like, damn, she was 27? I did not know that.
Did you think she was older?
I did.
It's the makeup.
I was like, what? But it's all really talented people,
yeah,
who had made a mark. And they were gone too soon. You know, it was like always right before their like biggest break. They were all rock stars and all the things. But it's like right before they got to that, the biggest break of their lives, they died. And all at 27. But Robert Johnson was the first. There's only two verified photographs of Robert Johnson. Again, very mysterious. No known video of him, but I mean,
yeah,
like,
duh.
I mean, it's not like it's today, you know, like today it would have been, oh, here's a TikTok of him. Here's this. Here's that. It's just those photographs. So there was a new one that was put on eBay, and a guy named Zeke Sheen, I think he is a guitar expert. He was like, oh, I think this is Robert Johnson. So I'm going to snap this up because this person don't know what they have. And he studied every detail. The long fingers, the fedora, like the eyes that just look so haunted. And eventually he got it authenticated. And the man really was Robert Johnson in that photo.
How do they know that, though?
From the other two photos that were verified. Mm. Like, I mean, these people, you know, have all the things, and I mean, they didn't just say, huh, yeah, looks like him.
No, I know they have their ways, but I'm like, I just don't know how.
Yeah. But of course, with death comes all the shit with families, because there have been legal battles over who owns the rights to his music, his image, his name, all of that. And it's like, my God, like, I get it, but I don't get it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Now, a little bit more about Robert Johnson is that it kind of like fed the legend more, is that he would practice in graveyards a lot. And people were like, oh, that's creepy. But also, that's a quiet place for him to practice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's away from people, because, you know, people would be like, that's too loud. Get out of here. Don't do that.
Or steal his music.
Very true. Very true. And then also, like, speaking of stealing stuff from him, he would turn to face the wall in the recording studios. So people couldn't see how he was doing his stuff with the guitar and all. And so that's also to the legend being like the devil was playing the guitar with him. That's why it sounded like double
two people.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, it's just so much mystery is around him. Like, why did he do that? Really? But was it just to keep them from stealing the stuff? But also, like, it's kind of like no one could steal Jimi Hendrix because he was Jimi Hendrix. Like, his moves, it's just like, holy shit. You know what I mean? So Robert Johnson, with his long fingers and everything, he could do stuff that, like, I could never do.
Yeah, but somebody could, though.
Very true. Very true.
And it just takes the right person seeing it to be able to copy it.
Yeah. But yeah, that, again, we kind of have, I was like listening to your story and I was like, yeah, we have nothing in common this time. But again, it's still a mystery of where his body is. But I mean, we know he died and, you know, all of that. But like where his body's buried, we don't know. We don't know the truth behind any of it. Like he might have went and practiced his little butt off every, you know, chance he could, and he did become better, or something else really did happen and he did make a deal with the devil.
No, he went and practiced. Some like random person in the woods taught him how to play. You know, like
yeah.
He went on some like excursion and found some, you know, I don't believe in the devil thing.
Do you believe someone could do that at the crossroads, like summon the devil?
I don't know if I believe in the devil. So, unsure.
All I know is that every time I say the crossroads, it reminds me of the crossroads by my house and those two fucking mirrors.
Look, I have seen them with my own two eyes. That shit is creepy as shit.
It's so creepy. And so I'm like, I know one thing. I will never look in those mirrors and ask for anything, hope for anything, think of anything. I don't want to do anything. Because I feel like if there was a crossroads that you could summon a demon or the devil or anything evil, it's right there.
Right there. Mm-hmm.
Oh, Lord.
But also, why are they there? Also,
I don't know.
All I could think about is Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Yeah. Good. It kind of brought me back to college, though, because we have a local like CD shop that's also... I say CD, but, you know, like, they have albums and all the things. But they also have, like, a cafe with it. It's called T-Bones. And when I was in college and found out about Robert Johnson, I went there, and they had some of his CDs and stuff. And they're like, wait, how do you know about this? And I'm like, my professor? And I think they actually knew the professor because, again, he was just that cool guy.
I remember this professor you're talking about. Wasn't your brother friends with a guy that owned T-Bones?
He was.
So I don't feel like it should just like random somebody. They'd be like, this girl coming in. How do you know about that? It was because like they knew you.
No, I don't know.
Because that's annoying if they're like, how do you know?
Well, because he was so well known then, and to like artists and stuff, well known, but not ever. Like when you say blues, people think of B.B. King and things like that. But B.B. King learned from Robert Johnson. Because I would have never heard of him had it not been for that history professor.
Yeah, but I don't like the condescension. Like, you could know a lot of people that they don't know. How do you know that? Gross. Who says that?
Well,
I mean, a lot of people, and that's the problem.
Very true.
Don't judge a book by its fucking cover.
Though I do judge books by their cover, though. Like, especially in, like, Books a Million. If it doesn't look good, I'm like, meh.
But I mean people.
I know. I'm just saying. Do you not judge books by their cover?
Yeah, I'm just saying the same. Look, I was trying to be like you with the same. Also, update. Colby just got home and his arms are fine. I was like, are your arms okay? And he was like, yeah.
Lord.
Well, thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to like, subscribe, review, all the things. And remember,
creep it real
and don't get scared.